allegations of financial impropriety and the misuse of public funds, fiscal and related matters, following the letter that we got from Honorable Hadley last week. But Tony, this was circulated yesterday, right? Two members. And what I'll do is, Advocate Jenkins, and I'll start with you, Susan, just to take us through this document in summary, and then we'll do questions. Yeah. All right. So, colleagues, is that in order? Are we all doing it? Okay. Just give Advocate a few minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, my colleagues and members of the public and the media chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity to present this. It's drafted by our office. Your usual expert, Ms. Fatima Ibrahim, assisted or actually did the bulk of this, did everything of it, to be honest. But if you know that she is with the Section 194 Committee, so I'm standing in for her here, Chair. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, it's my own doing, Chair. I thought I'll test my fitness and walk up the stairs in 2 minutes. I'm not 32 anymore, but I did it. I'm just sweating. Sir, I think what we do with this, with the background, I think everybody here knows the background and what happened with the interview with Mr. De Reiter, which gave rise to this request of the committee for us to brief it and for the committee to take this matter further. So the first question that we actually have in the background is whether the committee, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, is competent to do this, and the crux of the matter is in terms of NA Rule 245, paragraph C, it is, and we'll get to that when I look at the legal framework, which is the next point in the draft terms of reference, Chairperson. In that area, point two, or paragraph two, we set out the legal framework within which this inquiry may take place, and which gives the committee both the competency to deal with this, as well as the competency to summons people, to request people to appear and to report to the National Assembly on its findings. So, Chair, we highlight there Section 55 of the Constitution, first of all, which is the overall provision in the Constitution that gives National Assembly constitutional instructions to provide oversight over the executive organs of state in the national sphere of government and to maintain oversight over the exercise of that national executive authority, Chairperson. As well as any organ of state, this convenient organ of state, we find that obviously then creates the parliamentary oversight over ESCOM, first step. The powers that both the NA and its committee, the SCOPA, have is set out in the next point 2.2, section 56, which deals with the committee's power to summon any person to appear before it, to require any person to report to it or to submit information to it, and then if there's any resistance against it, to compel in terms of national legislation, that person or that the information is being delivered to the committee, and that is in terms of the provisions of the Powers and Privileges Act, of course, which we'll get to, in terms of subpoenaing or summoning a person. So Chair, from there we go to point three, which is really the specific functions and powers. We have, of course, general powers and functions of committees of the National Assembly, and then each committee has, if it's necessary, its own specific powers and functions, and the Standing Committee on Public Accounts being one of those. Chair, I can read through it, but I'm sure the members are familiar, and I just want to highlight what we spoke about above. Now, NA Rule 245, Sub-Rule 1, Paragraph C, the committee may initiate any investigation in its area of competence. The fact that SCOPA is empowered by the rules to look at all the financial statements and audit reports and entities, including SCOPA, gives SCOPA that, hook to say we want to investigate what exactly is going on with the finances and the expenditure, supply chain management issues, payroll issues of this entity. So, Chair, that, in short, paragraph 3 is about establishing the legal foundation and the competency of SCOPA to do what it wants to do. Chair, when we get to paragraph 4, the objective and the purpose of the oversight inquiry, that is where we start needing to draw lines, if I understand these terms of reference correctly, Chairperson. Because the general point is that in 4.1 is to consider the allegations of financial impropriety and the misuse of public funds at ESCOM pursuant to the oversight mandate of SCOPA. And that's a very broad basis for this inquiry, or the delineation of this inquiry, Chairperson. So we go to 4.2, which sets out the purpose is to test the allegations. These are the allegations mentioned in the interview in order to determine whether there's been any non-compliance of laws and policies applicable to ESCOM and to make recommendations on what action, if any, ought to be taken, or to refer matters to the appropriate law enforcement agency, identifying gaps or weaknesses in the financial management system with a view of conducting further oversight on the rectification of such gaps and the weaknesses, then ascertaining if the extent of the financial mismanagement has been captured in the audit reports, and if not, why not. So that's, Chairperson, a very long sentence, especially if you walk five. It happens when lawyers start writing, Chairperson. You know, we start with a sentence and you think, but we should bring that in and that in. So that sets out the ambit. 4.2, I think I find it very, very important paragraph for members to look at to see if this is where we are going, because we have the allegations to start off with. From the allegations, what exactly is meant there, what has been said, what has not been said, were there any non-compliance? We see the Constitution requires, National Assembly must exercise oversight over the implementation of legislation. So was there non-compliance of the PFMA, for instance? What has been done there? We know that National Treasury is supposed to ensure that there is enforcement of the PFMA. Has that happened? That is one of the questions one can look at. Has there been financial misappropriation of funds? Were there gaps and weaknesses in its systems? If there were those, were they reported, were they captured in the audit of these entities? If not, why not? What can be done with the auditing of these things? Why didn't it come out earlier, or is now the appropriate time for these to come out if it is there? So, Chair, that's really starting to get into the nuts and bolts of this inquiry, Chairperson. Now, the primary, I'm going to 4.3 now, Chairperson. The primary and overarching objective of the oversight inquiry is therefore to contribute to the strengthening of financial management and governance practices in ESCOM, my apologies, to ensure that public funds are not misused and that ESCOM is able to effectively and efficiently carry out its mandate and functions in the interests of all South Africans. And then the last sentence there, Chairperson. So I think what we're trying to say there is that the focus of this inquiry is not really, and this is what we've seen in the media, the focus is what happened at ESCOM, not whether the CEO actually reported this or didn't report it. That's a matter for law enforcement or the Justice Committee or something like that. But what really is happening with the finances? The former CEO said that there's misappropriation of funds and nothing has been done. Whether that was reported is obviously something that must be taken into consideration, but for the purpose of seeing, did it end up in an audit report? was it disclosed, like the PFMA wants us to disclose these kind of deficiencies in our SEM systems, our supply chain management systems, Chairperson. So Chair, that's the end of paragraph 4 or section 4, paragraph 4 of the terms of reference, and I think that sets up where the committee wants to go, what kind of questions are going to be asked, and so on and so on. So it's very important. Chairperson, paragraph 5 deals with the format of the oversight inquiry. Now, the NA rules give the permission or give the power to a committee to investigate anything within its area of competence. So it doesn't go into details what kind of structure or form such inquiry must take. We have specific rules when we're looking at the Section 194 process. That's removing members of board members of the Chapter 9 institutions. And there's specific requirements to have a leader of evidence or an evidence leader, and there's rights of reply, and the courts have said that when you have such a person then going through such an inquiry, that itself requires that the person is then represented with a legally qualified person. These do not apply when it's a scope or another portfolio committee wants to investigate something falling within its mandate. So that we don't have specific rules to say we must have an evidence leader. We don't have specific rules to say there's an affidavit that's been read, a statement of a witness, and then there are questions being asked first by the evidence leader and then by members of the committee, or first by members of the committee, then evidence leader, and so on, Chairperson. So what SCOPA needs to decide is what is the format of its oversight inquiry. Does it? Let me just stop there for and pause, Chairperson, and say first the foundation for such an inquiry is not a judicial or quasi-judicial process. It is not a tribunal. It's not there to solve a problem. It's there to making recommendations, to report back to the House, to refer things to relevant law enforcement agencies. And this is what I've been told since day one I started working in this institution, Chairperson, Parliament has two weapons that it can use, two tools that it can use to achieve what it wants to achieve, resolutions and legislation. So the committee can run with the inquiry, the inquisitorial, in other words, finding out what is happening, what happened, and what can we do. What the committee can do is propose legislation, can refer things to those bodies which have, for instance, forensic capabilities, which have law enforcement capabilities, which can refer things to the National Prosecuting Authority if that's necessary, and it can go to court and so forth. So that is just sort of dealing with the tools that SCOPA has to use and assisting with, or then reverse engineering it back to what process should we follow with this inquiry. Chairperson, paragraph 5.3 is trying to summarize exactly, if you want to put a heading above this inquiry, to inquire into a report, and in the report to make recommendations concerning the allegations of financial impropriety and the misuse of public funds made by the former Group Chief Executive, Mr. Anders de Reiter, during an interview held with journalist Annika Larsen at ENCA on 22nd February 2023. And those are captured in Annexure B to these chairpersons. So that again just summarizes the ambit, the scope of the inquiry. It doesn't quite deal with the format of the inquiry. Jeremy, in paragraph 5.4, we just want to, well, through SCOPA, through members here, SCOPA acknowledges that the allegations are complex and traverse a number of areas which may not be directly linked to the oversight mandate of SCOPA. Now, whilst the role of SCOPA is not considered criminal matters such as the acts of sabotage, theft, or employment practices, it is clear that these matters are interlinked with the financial administration of ESCOM. So to that extent, SCOPA will consider such evidence for purpose of probing the effect thereof on the sound financial and supply chain management processes and practices of ESCOM. Jerry, in other words, we're looking at all the facts, but we're focusing our recommendations and we're focusing at SCOPA on what we can do with the financial issues. How can we do financial reporting better? How can we do financial controls better? Supply chain management processes better, Chairperson. I think I've said it enough. That deals with 5.5, the separation of powers, so that SCOPA deals with its oversight mandate and do not traverse into for law enforcement or criminal areas with the South African Police Service, the Hawks, SIU and so on can do. And most probably one must find out what is happening in those institutions. So Chairperson, 5.6 is trying to, just to give some context to it, Chair, unless it's necessary, I'm not going to read through it. It just deals again with what is the exact nature of oversight that SCOPA can exercise. And we're dealing now with, I would say, the elements of 5.7.1. What SCOPA may be one to consider in coming to an approved terms of reference. Does it want an evidence leader or leaders? Parliament has gone through a few inquiries in the last 5 to 6 years. We're dealing with one presently, a very complicated one, with the public protector, Chairperson. So we felt that two evidence leaders might be the safest option because of the complexity and because people do need support to put these questions to the witnesses, Chairperson. They will play a facilitating role and use... evidence leaders will no way limit or impede the rights of members, Chairperson. This is what we at Legal Services are always very concerned about when we get evidence leaders, because the fundamental responsibility lies with Parliament to exercise oversight. And Parliament is made up of members. So it is really for members to get into the nitty-gritty and the details of whatever facts are being put before the committee by witnesses through the evidence leaders, and then for the committee members to ask the questions which they... which is relevant for this inquiry within SCOPA's mandate, of course, Chairperson. And we mentioned there that obviously an evidence leader must be suitably qualified legal persons and will assist the committee with legal advice and drafting its report together with the internal resources of the committee to ensure that that report can also stand stand any scrutiny by a court, because these usually end up in court by whoever is being implicated in the report, and they feel that they did not receive a fair hearing or weren't treated fairly in the committee. So Chairperson, in the witnesses, just want to go there because it's really, I do want to just say, we deal with it later, Chair, but when we're dealing with this fairness and the evidence leaders and the reports of the committee, of course, if anybody is implicated, there's any finding by the committee or recommendation that impacts, negatively affects any person, then that draft report is first distributed to those people to comment before the committee finally makes a finding and report to the House. Chairperson, witnesses, we've set out a few persons listed in Annexure A. I think the new Minister of Electricity might be added to that. I don't know if it might be necessary or not. But certainly for the way forward and how things have been panning out, that could be added. I just looked at that as well. So there's a list of proposed people that can be called to answer oral questions on the subject matter of the oversight inquiry. And as we say, that it can be expanded. Chairperson, as you well know, if any of the invited witnesses refuses to avail him or herself, or if it's a company, if there's a board that refuses to, the committee has the power to subpoena in terms of Section 14.2b of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. The witnesses, as I indicated before, will be invited to submit a statement or an affidavit. I want to emphasize the word invited. They can't be forced to do it, but we can invite them to make a statement. And that statement can then be the basis for the evidence, that is paragraph B. That could be the basis for then the inquiry vis-a-vis that specific witness. And the questions can flow from there, and follow-up questions can be done there. And members, of course, will be provided copies of those witness statements prior to the day that the inquiry happens vis-a-vis that witness. And these statements are then made public so that the public can also participate at least by being present and knowing what is being said and what witness has revealed. All witnesses will be requested to take an oath or an affirmation in accordance with NA Rule 168. That's basically swearing in, and that will, Chairperson, give the witness the protection given in the Act as well. The witness is sworn in, and of course the witness can't be prosecuted for anything he or she might say during that inquiry unless it pertains to the crime of perjury. In other words, misleading the committee deliberately. If there's a misleading deliberately, then the person can be prosecuted about this. Otherwise, they get that same witness protection as a witness in the High Court would have. So it's important that people get sworn in, or witnesses get sworn in. No witness, paragraph E. No witnesses shall have the right to legal representation, because we're not taking a specific action against a specific person here. It's an inquiry, an inquisitorial inquiry into the financial management of Eskom and what has been said by the former group executive chairperson. So it's not the same as the section 194, where a person can lose their job and all their benefits because of a finding of a committee where the courts have said you must have legal representation. So in other words, the person may seek legal advice at his own cost, no legal representation will be allowed, and no legal representative will be allowed to participate in the proceedings. Chairperson, the committee of course is in charge of its own procedures. So should there be a need where the committee wants to hear someone, they can ask them, but there's no right to address the committee as we have with the section 194 inquiry. So a legal representative or person supporting a witness don't have a right to address the committee and say, I want to say something, otherwise it's unfair. That opportunity will arrive when there's a draft report distributed to people who might be affected by the report. No witness or third party will be allowed to cross-examine any other witness. However, any interested person may submit written questions to SCOPA for his consideration, for SCOPA's consideration. And that is, we're dealing with that in the public participation area, Chair. I think when we get there, I'll deal with it, because it's at 5.7.3, so it's just the very next section. So let me finish this. Paragraph G, I've already mentioned, Chair, the auri alteram partem, it's a principle of natural justice. Everybody must have an opportunity to respond to allegations against that person. So before the committee adopts and table its report before its ATC, in our language B, all affected persons must be provided with an opportunity to make representations on the findings and recommendations. So the people affected by the findings and recommendations will have an opportunity to respond to them. And the committee can include that in the report as well. I think it will be necessary to include that in the report if we don't want the report to be challenged in the court. Paragraph H sets out the format. Chairperson, evidence leaders will present the evidence of a witness to the committee. In other words, they will ask questions to put it on record. And all members will be given an opportunity to pose questions to witnesses, and questions to witnesses will be subject to reasonable restrictions of the chairperson, including the imposition of time frames, of course. If there's a need to recall certain witness, it may do so. And of course, to recall witness, one can also take the option of asking written questions and for such questions to be posed orally afterwards through Skype or through Zoom or anything, chairperson, if it's impossible to recall a witness. So the public participation issue and transparency comes again from the Constitution, where the National Assembly and its committees must facilitate public involvement in its committee processes. So that would include oversight processes like an inquiry. So although the NA rules do not dictate the manner in which such public participation must be conducted, it's necessary that a reasonable opportunity is offered to members of the public and all interested parties to be informed of the work of the committee and to have an adequate say. So in other words, the committee meetings must be open and broadcast on Parliament TV and its social media channels. Unless documents are privileged, I'm talking about legal opinions that reflect on litigation and so forth, all other documents that are not privileged related to the work of the committee, including all evidence before the committee, and including those witness statements, must be made available to the public on the parliamentary website, and similar to what we are doing in the Section 194 inquiry in 46 downstairs. The purpose of public participation will not be to consider any personal opinions that members of the public might have with regard to the operations of ESCOM, but to obtain records and testimony that may assist SCOPA in fulfilling its mandate. As such, only submissions which relate to SCOPA's oversight mandate will be considered. So, yeah, there will have to be some kind of vetting if we want to, if we allow the public, not if we, if the public is allowed to submit whatever they want to in terms of this. I mean, one will find emails that's written saying that this should have been asked, or didn't you pick this up, or that, I'm not sure. That, of course, will have to go through a type of filtering process just to see that the committee can be aware of whatever is relevant. But of course, I mean, it's not for officials to say what's relevant or not. One can only assist the committee, and the committee must have a central point. So I would suggest that if there's an email, of course, it's like the committee secretary's email, where all public submissions can be sent to, and members can then look at those and decide for itself what is relevant or not relevant for the inquiry. What is relevant then must be put on record, Chairperson, and reflected in the committee report to say, well, how we've done it. And if the committee report respects public participation, that's another box ticked should the committee be challenged in court afterwards. Chairperson, partnerships, if any, SCOPA will work together with other role players, including the SIU, to ensure that the information obtained during the oversight inquiry is shared with relevant law enforcement agencies. And SCOPA may accept assistance from civil society organizations or academic institutions that may be able to offer assistance at no cost to SCOPA in conducting its oversight inquiry. So we might find that, you might find someone that's interested and wants to assist, and if we include that in our terms of reference now, Chairperson, then that's done. Then we don't have to amend the terms of reference if you get such a request. Reasonable time frames within which to conduct the inquiry, commencing as soon as possible or when the committee is ready. It's a structured oversight inquiry of this nature requires preparatory time to procure the necessary service and prepare for oral testimony. So this, Chair, is a bit of a dark alley, if I may say that, because we don't really know what lies behind Mr. De Ruyter's statement. I don't really know. I mean, obviously there will be certain people in it. But we're talking here about time frames. We want to do it as fast as possible. We want to prepare. But during the inquiry, certain things will come out that might change that. So I think this is in the nature of parliamentary work in any event. But it will be necessary to look at certain time frames. And to see what can be done on that. But the preparatory work, Chairperson, and I mean, if I'm just thinking, if we want to, should the committee decide to get two evidence leaders, how do we procure them? We need to get financial authorization for that. What exactly do we want them to do? Where is this going? So, Chair, there might be a need to just maybe consider a preparatory stage for this inquiry for members to say, shouldn't we first call, I'm just using as an example, one or two members of cabinet to say what exactly is going on there, what has been done, can they give us a direction, what gaps is it that must be filled, which SCOPA can stand up for and fill that. Maybe call Mr. De Ruyter and ask him exactly where is this going. Have you made a formal complaint with the police? Is something being taken up by the hawks? And then the inquiry will start taking shape. I'm just thinking of the question, should we use two evidence leaders? If it's necessary, if it's not necessary, then the committee can have inquiry that's not driven by evidence leaders, but members themselves putting the facts on the table. So those are the two options that are there. It's always been there. But the preparatory work to make that decision is something that one might to consider. The venue issue, those are sort of the housekeeping issues. And then, of course, there's the issue of accommodating persons unable to travel to physically meet to physical meetings, and there might be a need to have hybrid sessions, Chairperson. The resources we set out in the next paragraph 6. Issues of budget, the role of committee secretaries and committee assistants, drafting of minutes, the content advisor and researcher, the sort of setting out the team, the legal advisor and any other legal resource, communications officer, an IT technician or specialist in case there's the virtual meetings and so forth, as well as for the publication and the broadcasting of the proceedings of the committee. Those are all required to be part of the team that can support this inquiry, Chairperson. The details are set out there, so I don't think it's critically necessary that I go through it unless the political demand. I'm just trying to save time. And then the amendments as well as directions. The scope of my amend these terms by resolution, and the terms of reference do not preclude the chairperson from issuing directives to persons appearing before SCOPA in accordance with NA Rule 183. So those powers and duties are still there, chairperson. Just so that we are not midway through an inquiry hamstrung or stymied by our own adoption of these terms of reference. These can be changed, and you can issue directives about how to do it. Chair, from there on, it's the annexures and the research done by the content advisor, I think, Chair. So those are the broad terms of reference, Chair. Thank you very much. Of course, SCOPA must determine the list of these witnesses. Thank you, Chair.
Right, Honourable Van Minden, thank you very much, Advocate. Honourable Somi will follow.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Advocate, for this presentation. Look, I think we all agree very much, and I mean, we have certainly in the last 4 years spent more time with ESCOM than we have with anything else. It's something that has really dominated this committee. And we all agree that we really do need to see an in-depth investigation into ESCOM. I think that the allegations that we have heard, as well as the issues that we have seen over the last 4 years, really speak to that in a huge way. But I think we also probably agree that we need to have the best possible vehicle to do that. Now, next Thursday, which is the 23rd, Parliament is going to be debating the possibility of an ad hoc committee from Parliament to do exactly this. And, you know, my concerns with this process that we're in now is that it is firstly a duplication, that there is no time pressure on us at the moment to agree to these terms of reference before next week. As we've already heard, there will be, even if we go ahead with this, there will be delays with preparing, there will be delays with trying to facilitate the participation. I know we as a committee have had a debate about the fact that the meetings used to be broadcast are no longer broadcast, and that the tender to, in fact, have cameras has been ended. So one would need to revisit all of that. The clock is ticking in terms of the parliamentary term. We have just over a year left. We don't want to get ourselves caught up in something where we are literally not able to finish, because we also have a duty not just to Parliament for oversight, but obviously the oversight stems from South Africans, and we know the issue that ESCOM is certainly causing across the country. So I think we need to certainly consider waiting until after the debate next Thursday. There is no prejudice at all to this committee in doing that, but I certainly think there are issues we need to consider. As we've heard this morning, we are competent to do an investigation in terms of Section 245. But SCOPA's oversight is limited to our mandate. And I think that a suitable vehicle would be a vehicle that includes other committees, energy, SOEs, looking at bringing in other competencies from other committees to be able to do a proper, well-rounded investigation. We certainly don't want to miss anything because of limitations for our oversight. Certainly we can look at the financial issues, the audit issues, the supply chain management, but we are limited in terms of some of this, and the advocate has also pointed that out when he was discussing certainly paragraph 4. Now what concerns me about paragraph 4 is that 4.1 and 4.3 don't generally or completely speak to what we saw in 4.2. 4.2 has indicated that it could very well be a wider scope. And I'm very concerned that just being a single party committee, we could inadvertently really be limiting the scope of this investigation. I think it's important to ensure that we aren't overly focused, that we then exclude things that might very well be relevant. It in that way also almost looks at prejudging what the issues are in ESCOM. In terms of the format, I also want to sound a warning. I sit on Section 194. And that has been literally several times a week, all day, since July. It is set through recesses. It has set continually. It is still in action now, and it's going to end anytime soon. And I'm very concerned that what we could end up doing inadvertently is eviscerating SCOPA. So that SCOPA isn't able to pursue the rest of its mandate, that we end up so consumed by this investigation that the rest of our work has to be put aside. We've already had this debate 2 weeks ago when it came to the state capture debate, and I think it's very important that SCOPA remains true to its mandate and doesn't just get sidetracked by one issue where all our work and all our energy is consumed in that single issue. And then in terms of the public participation, again, I go back to what I originally started off with. We mustn't have a situation where, because of the format, people aren't able to view and participate as required by Parliament. So in essence, what I'm saying is we all agree we need to have the best possible vehicle. We agree that ESCOM needs to be investigated. But I think at this point, to deal with these concerns, there is no prejudice to us if we actually wait until after the debate next Thursday to ensure that the whole of Parliament moves forward together on this point. Thank you. That wasn't me.
Thank you very much. But if you just please take note of all the issues raised that may require your responses, and then we'll get responses.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Morning, members and stakeholders present. Thank you very much, Advocate, for the work which cuts through the actual process, which is as a result of what we dealt with last week. So there's no freshness of an idea, except for our decision last week. Where I would want to take your work on, which I think is an informing part of where we should start, even before we could say now we implement the actual terms of reference. I think your paragraph captures it. I think paragraph 4.2 does capture the critical element of a starting of some process, whether do we want to go this direction or that direction, and indeed informed by the basis of some information out there. Because Honorable Hadebe's correspondence is informed by the interview which Mr. Durator had. And on our part, we don't have any information. That information would have it if we have an opportunity to hear from him. But from what he said, it's clear that we can't hear from him alone, because he's been the CEO of ESCOM, and there the accounting authority is the board, and the executive authority is the ministry. And therefore, for us to be able to say we are moving along with this particular path or this particular path will only be informed when we have those kinds of informing statements which would be at hand, where would be determining that these elements of the terms of reference could be applied in a particular format. So I would want to propose, Honorable Chair, that having had these kinds and sorts of worked upon terms of reference are assisting us to point towards a particular direction with an assumption that we have all and the base of starting to listen in accordance a particular direction and direct, therefore, the inquiry towards such an angle. So what I would propose that it might be of necessity that before we get into that point, we correspond with or to the key parties in the equation. The key parties are in the institution which we are talking about, that is ESCOM, which then might be the fact that the starting point would be Mr. De Reuters, the former CEO, the board on the matters have been raised by Honorable Adebe, and the ministry as matters which have been raised. The key question is that if there has been corruption, if there has been loss, financial loss of closer to R1 billion a month, what all of them, what is it that they have done? You see, and they must answer that question. And then and you crown it by saying our own inquiry would be somewhat you termed it and framed it differently to what we'd want to see in the legal context. Doesn't carry that burden. You see, it's an inquisitive form of inquiry, and therefore is driven by that kind of a scenario in terms of finding answers, and then you end up by saying, having found all what we found, then 4.3 would then be directing what needs to be done about such facts found out of that position. The nature of what we want to get into is totally different because we want to get into the ground which is not necessarily our own ground. Secondly, we'd want to get into inquiring to assist ESCOM, not to get into a place where it is currently or in the past, or the future is informed by somewhat what we have somewhat dealt with. And that's why I won't venture into any other form of inquiry which relates to something which is not ours. Matters of ethics, matters of criminality, and all. So would somewhat be having a focus which relates to the financial misconduct or financial loss which has been experienced by the body as well. And therefore, sitting where I'm sitting, that kind of an approach would have to start somewhere. We must have something from Mr. Director, something from the board, something from the ministry, because they are primary actors in the institution where those matters which Mr. Director has informed the public on have been occurring. Whatever happens anywhere else is of such bodies which we should not necessarily in consideration around those kinds of matters. So as COPA, we can't wait for any other thing. We can't pause for any other thing because time is of essence, and if it's of essence, we must deal with these things in accordance to our defined role as that committee in a way. So my own persuasion to the committee is that whatever takes place, whatever, we know that there is some organization which has taken a particular stance. We send this person to report this matter to the police. Even if there's any other debate in any other corner, that debate must go on. We are focused in terms of our defined role, which is this role, so that we can assist the process. So there's no way that we can say, let's wait here up until these things are somewhat in that way. So the initiation of the period of the process, and my proposal is that let's deal with those and note these terms of reference, so that if there's a need to implement them, that is going to be informed by the fact that based on the information, this is where we're going, this is how we're going to go, this is what we're going to deal with. So far, we're not at that point because the information is not at hand. so we can't in a way negate anything, or we can't be trying to hold on anything. You see, we must try to find a way just to determine our own progress. That's a view which I wanted to express. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Hatem, and then Honorable Liz, were you who parliament?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sean Zoolander.
Thank you, Shalom Yabonga. Thanks, Advocate, for the great work done. Chair, I want to focus here on the legal opinion that was finished to us, dated the 7th of March 2023. And I just want to highlight some key and fundamental points that were raised there as the basis of my proposed approach in dealing with this matter, Chair. And I think, first and foremost, the legal opinion does acknowledge that these are extremely serious allegations given the magnitude and the extent of the alleged abuse of public funds and the period over time which the allegation apparently played out. Any oversight in relation to these issues will require a dedicated and concerted effort on the part of SCOPE. It went on to say the allegation raised concerned the financial administration of the entity and falls squarely within the oversight mandate of SCOPE. And generally, all of us agree that indeed these allegations fall within our mandate as SCOPE. The legal opinion went further to say, Chair, in order to fulfill this oversight mandate, SCOPE will require further information to ascertain the veracity of the allegation. However, it does not appear that Mr. De Reiter's claim at this stage are substantiated in documentary evidence. So we are therefore advised that as the starting point, Chair, SCOPE may wish to address the correspondence to Mr. De Reiter, requesting him to provide information, including records, which can then form the basis of further discussion in the committee on any relevant issue, including but not limited to these four issues when we write to Mr. De Reiter. One, any information that he may have on the alleged misuse of public funds within ESCOM. B, information relating to whether there were any instructions from any minister or member of parliament or other officials or person to dispense with any financial prescripts in the expenditure of funds by ESCOM. C, whether any officials or public representatives have benefited or are benefiting unlawfully in relation to the expenditure of public funds by ESCOM, and lastly, whether there are any records showing the unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure and evidence related to who may have benefited from some. So these are the four key bases that when we write to Mr. De Reiter, we would want him to explain in writing, and that has to be done in a form of an affidavit. The opinion goes on to say SCOPE may, after consideration of all the information submitted to it, determine whether it is necessary to invite Mr. De Reiter. And I think we've already established that yes, there is a need to invite Mr. De Reiter to appear before the committee to further amplify on any information. I don't want to go to this paragraph because I think the advocate has alluded to but it is important also to note that in an event that SCOPA resolved to invite Mr. Director to provide written evidence, such engagement must be for the purpose of and pursuant to maintaining oversight of the executive in relation to expenditure of public funds. In other words, it is not the role of SCOPA to deal with any alleged ethical breaches of any member of the executive or to deal with operational policy issues relevant to ESCOM. So I think even the advocate has alluded to that fact. So these are the key issues, Chair, that arises from the legal opinion. It went further to say we advise that for practical purposes it may be wise to first engage ESCOM, who is the legal custodian of the financial records of ESCOM and should be asked to account on steps it intends to take or has already taken in relation to this allegation. So over and above writing to Mr. Director, we are also advised that we can write to the board, whether we invite them like we normally do or we ask them to finish us with a written response on intentions that they intend to take or steps that they have already taken. So this is the legal opinion that was sought from Parliamentary Legal Services on behalf of this committee by the chairperson. So our approach, yes, we fully concur that first and foremost, let us write to Mr. Director requesting him to provide information which can assist the basis of our discussion going forward. In as much as I am eager, and as the ANC company, we're eager to deal with this matter expeditiously, Chair. We don't want to miss any steps and play into the garral just for the sake of dealing with this matter. The supporting document will assist us in this regard. We also concur with the proposal that it may be wise for us to engage the board, and the board should be asked to account on what steps they have taken. We are in full agreement once again that the committee can determine any additional steps that we wish to take, such as referrals to appropriate authorities, hawks for investigation where the criminal conduct is suspected as per the legal opinion. We can do that, we agree. SIU can be approached as well, like we normally do, Chair. So we are mindful that it is not SCOPA's mandate to deal with any alleged ethical breach of members of the executive. Whether or not we want to refer this matter to the public protector, that's the debate for another day. But I don't think we are there yet. This will be determined by what will be reported or submitted by Mr. Director. Lastly, one last point that I've just included now, and it's not always the case that I agree with my colleagues on my left, but I think she raised a very key and important point that we might need to consider the joint type of an inquiry with public enterprise and minerals and energy in order for us not to miss any other key and critical points which don't fall within our scope and mandate. I know for a fact that public enterprise has written to Mr. Director and they had invited him to appear on the 7th of March. Unfortunately, he did not respond. So there is a keen interest in public enterprise. We don't know whether or not the minerals and energy are also contemplating in doing something. But I think as this committee, we can approach these two committees and find out what are the plans in relation to this matter, Chair. So as the component of the African National Congress, we are proposing that Let's start with writing to the rater, the board, and if it needs be, calling on the whole SIU to pursue some matter that might be of criminal in nature. The terms of reference very progressive and crystal clear. We note them, but until such time that we know what is it that we're dealing with, we are not in a position to put our heads on the block. And what I'm saying is also echoed by the advocate. He said, and I quote you, we don't know what lies behind Mr. Delator's statement. And he said, we should consider preparatory work first, call Mr. Director, call the minister, and I'm adding that we must call the board. So I echo your sentiments that indeed there is a need for preparatory work because, like you have put it, we do not know what lies behind Mr. Director's statement. Chair, I submarine.
Mr. Chairman, just I think that there's unanimity in this committee in terms of the need to get to the bottom of the Eskom malfeasance in every aspect of it, not just the financial aspect, but in every aspect. And the best vehicle to do that is for an ad hoc committee to be established as we have proposed and will be presumably, given my colleague's support for getting to the bottom of Eskom, be supported by Parliament next week. However, Mr. Chairman, if indeed there are some sort of lack of enthusiasm for a full ad hoc committee, which is the vehicle even better than any joint committees, an ad hoc committee, if there's some reluctance there, then we as a committee have indeed already in principle last week agreed to an investigation by SCOPA, limited as it is in its scope of investigation. And so we can go back to that in the event of there being reluctance by Parliament to expose all the malfeasance that clearly has taken place in Eskom over a long period of time. It's not something new. We've been warning about it for a long time. This committee has exposed it from time to time. It's not new, but it has not been properly dealt with. And that is way beyond simply the financial aspect. But if there's a reluctance to deal with the degree of malfeasance that's taken place in Eskom over the last 10 years or so, then of course SCOPA must continue its work. And indeed, I agree with Honourable Somia. There's no reason why SCOPA cannot continue the work that we are mandated to do involving Eskom. Right now, we don't need to wait for Parliament to decide on an ad hoc committee. We have a mandate. We're already exercising that mandate quite extensively over the last few years with oversight visits, etc., etc. That work must carry on. I see no reason why that work shouldn't carry on, and I agree absolutely with Honourable Somia on that point. But the need to deal with Eskom in a really thorough way will not be the purview of SCOPA. And that purview, we believe, is one that an ad hoc committee should be established to deal with, especially given the last such investigation in 2018 by the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, which did expose certain malfeasance but really didn't get to the real issues at Eskom, and Eskom simply continued its downward spiral even after that investigation. And many of the people who were fingered in that investigation are still fighting their cases and refusing to pay their pension payout back or whatever should have happened since then. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that certainly we agree with the ANC in terms of getting on with doing the work that we mandated to do. However, if indeed there's a reluctance by Parliament to establish an ad hoc committee, we have as a committee already in principle last week agreed to an investigation, and we may need to return to reconsider that and the terms of reference that have been so well put out today. What we don't want, Mr. Chair, we really don't want, and I know that there are no TV cameras here, but we don't want another TV show that goes on for a year. We just don't want that. We want real investigation, real work done, people to go to jail, and whether or not Eskom can be fixed is a moot point. Some of us have different views about that, but at least get to the point where there are consequences for all the malfeasance. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Advocate, any reaction that you have, and then we'd try and propose a way forward so that we can bring this to a logical conclusion.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I think I've heard of the common thread as sort of an agreement with the members that the idea is that to start with the procurement process, to get an inquiry and all the parts of it together, it is putting the cart before the horses. We first want more information. So, Chair, I think there are two things that I need to mention here. One is the way that my memory reflects my work that I've done for SCOPA through these years. At this stage, I was more involved than recently, and my colleague Fatima Ibrahim has been more involved recently. But I have experience with SCOPA, extensive experience, I want to say. And we call the Auditor General, Chairperson. And we ask the Auditor General about the audit report. And of course, there's a closed briefing session usually that is between whether it's the audit firm subcontracted, because that usually happens with SOEs, or whether it's the audit by the Auditor General itself. To get to the details, what is the management's attitude about management letters and so forth? Now, that is under normal circumstances where there may be a clip here and there on the SEM issue, so this might be bigger. But in the meantime, the Auditor General has gotten certain powers to issue fines for management that cannot explain wasted and fruitless expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, and so forth. Number one. Number two, what is the Auditor General's view about what Mr. De Ruyter said? Are these things captured within the audit report? If not, why not? So that is for me a critical issue for this committee to move forward into the investigation. And the other part is the board itself. I think Mr. De Ruyter needs to answer questions, Chairperson, because he made the statement and he knows why he made it. But the board itself has an oversight function, and what is necessary for the committee to understand is what is the board doing about various issues that Mr. De Ruyter has raised, and as I understand the media, he raised some of this already with the Hawks, and he raised some of this with the board, and he raised some of this with the minister in charge who appoints the board. So what has happened there, Chairperson? Was it just a response, and I say this with the biggest, with all my respect, was it just a response to say, show me the evidence before I do anything, or did they say, well, let's look at what is happening there, because it's not making a profit. It's got a complete monopoly, and I'm talking as a member of the public, it's got a complete monopoly, or used to have, on electricity, but it's not making a profit.
Anymore.
So, Chair, those are the questions that could lead this committee, I think, and this is what I'm hearing from the members, to a point where we say, let's then have something. This is the second thing I wanted to say, and that's the example, I think around about 1998, 1999, 2000, it happened just before I came to Parliament, where we had the joint investigation team made up of various bodies, including the Hees Commission, that is now changed to the SIU, We had the Auditor General involved there and various committees. Scopa was not involved, and that was an issue. I think Scopa was excluded from the ad hoc committee or the joint investigation team. So that's another option. If there's an ad hoc committee, that's one option, and there's an investigating team that can do something like that. That's just an example I want to use. So these are mechanisms then to have a sort of multifaceted approach to the inquiry. And that's the other thing I've heard from the members here. Those are my responses. So that committee needs to consider this. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, I gather that preparatory work has to be done in order for the terms of reference to be complete. I think that's the summary. That in order for them to come full circle, the preparatory work needs to be done. We need to fill in the gaps. While there is a vote scheduled for an ad hoc committee next week, Thursday, I think that debate is tomorrow on it, in a mini plenary, and the decision is going into the House on Thursday next week. So I must just give one caution. We must not relegate ourselves to being a default position if other processes fail. So we are not a default position, that if Parliament doesn't do X, then somehow then we won't. Either we say yes or no. I think that is important.
Putting words in my mouth.
The second point is we must therefore invite Mr. Director to make a written submission and speak to us, and then we fill in the gaps, right? In the issues that are raised, and then at that point, if there's any work that we would have done, I would imagine, if the ad hoc committee is approved, I would imagine we will hand over to that committee at that point. Because at this point we don't know what form, structure or shape it will take in any case, right? In the event that it's realized, and I do know that there is a little appetite in this committee for joint committee meetings. So I'm not sure then what our role would be. But at the same time, this matter has been brought to Parliament, was received now in a live chair by Honourable Adem, and we considered it. So what I was going to suggest, colleagues, is there is a list of people whom, because the research and content advisory team, that Annex B, right, at the back, sort of seeks to summarize pointedly the salient points which are of particular interest to the committee in that interview. They went through the whole interview, I think more than once, and picked out the issues already, which are issues of focus, and thanks to the team for that. So already there's a particular scope in terms of what we're dealing with. As said, Mr. Dorita alleges his vote to the National Commissioner of Police. I would imagine it's a simple inquiry of getting the case number. Has the case been logged on the issue that he has raised? But what I would suggest, colleagues, is that Parliament comes back from recess on the 18th of April, 2023, and it's committee week from the 18th to the 21st, so there's no other work. And then normal committee meeting scheduling takes place from the 25th, the normal Tuesday and Wednesday. Can I then suggest that we write to Mr. Director correspondence, including but not limited to the issues that have been raised, but in the main is to get a submission from him on the issues that he raises in the interview, and then we invite him to have an engagement with the committee in the week of the 18th to the 21st, which is the committee week. So then that puts us, instead of saying in the event that these terms of reference must go to the next step, we filled in the gaps in so far as information is concerned. If the ad hoc committee is appointed, we will hand over what would be his submission to that committee. I would imagine, colleagues, can I propose that we write to him formally and get a written submission from him on the issues that he has raised, and then have an interaction with the AG on these issues as well as a committee. We will write to the National Commissioner of Police to say that the director alleges that he has an interaction with you and then has the case been logged. And that will fill in the gaps of what to do. So I was just pulling out the program quickly from SysDrop. It's a framework program of Parliament. So the dates available to us are this, because next week is Wednesday is Minister of Higher Education, and then that week is Oversight Week. So our last meeting is next week, Wednesday. It's already scheduled for something else. So the first available opportunity, and it gives us time to do the preparatory work and write and receive documents and any submissions or proposals that you may have, colleagues. So that's just, I'm trying to zone in on the issues that you have raised. Right? Honorable Hart David?
A great chair. Aluta continua. Our work shouldn't stop solely on the basis that there is a motion table before the House. Over and above writing to Mr. Dereda, I had also proposed that we must write to the board. We need to engage with the board. They must come and tell us what steps are they intend taking or they've taken in relation to this allegation. Thirdly, we must write to the minister to also respond to this allegation. And I fully concur. Also, the Auditor General, has there been any misrepresentation of facts in terms of material statements or misstatements on the audit of ESCOM? So those are the three interested parties that we should write to. Thank you.
Must I go ladies first?
Yeah,
okay. All right.
That's me.
Thank you, Chair. If that is the route we're going to follow, I also just want to point out that we may very well have to invite previous members of the board. We have seen quite a lot of chopping and changing, a lot of acting positions, a lot of shifts, and I think there are certainly people who previously were on the board who also could possibly illuminate things. Thank you.
Okay, before you see, I'm afraid we'll start the inquiry before we start the inquiry.
Just following up.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I was about to comment in that way. I think there are a lot of people who would need to be interviewed from time to time. So I think that your starting point is a good starting point. And perhaps add on the AG, I think, might be a good add-on. But let's start with those. And then, Mr. Chairman, could you please circulate the draft copies of these letters so that we can see whether we want to add anything to them before they get sent off? That would be very useful. Thank you very much. And then, Mr. Chairman, I made a little comment just now, which you all laughed at. But I do have another Zulu name. And I never tell anyone this, so there's no TV camera. I once worked for Dunlop Tyres in Ladysmith for a long time. I was quite a northern there, I thought. And I used to swank around the factory. And I later found out that my Dunlop name was Dormy.
Oh, yeah. All right, Bob Samuel, last one, and then suppose you're sitting with many Dormy. With any attempt, it's unofficial.
Yeah. Thanks, Sha. I agree with your comment. Let's not start with the requirement before it starts. Let's go where it matters first, so that we can get these issues. I still think that the AG could be invited when we have something at hand which says points in a particular direction. That this is what Mr. Director is referring to, the board and these others. So let's just confine ourselves for now on the body ESCOM. The body ESCOM, the ministry, the board, Mr. Director, and if need be your CFO, whoever, if that's the case. So the body ESCOM becomes central into the mining. Some information, yeah, and then we can deal with these other things after that. Then our research team would look into all these other things, this, that, and that, and that, and that. Okay?
This, colleagues, if there's anything that is of particular focus or relevance that you want, the correspondence, but the main thrust is that the director to appear to speak to us about the allegations that he made. Of course, is to make a written submission which will guide the discussion thereof, and I would imagine advocate powers and privileges would apply in that hearing for him as well. So he would have, so there's no prejudice. He would suffer by appearing, right?
No, he can be protected if he's sworn. No, that's not a problem.
All right. Because there's no longer a in the position that responsibility.
Well, yes, Chair. But even if we ask him to submit whatever he wants to in writing, but on an affidavit, then he is sworn in my view, in terms of the Powers and Privileges Act, and then he gets that protection a witness gets in the High Court.
Okay. So, colleagues, can I ask that your suggestions reach us and submit in charge? King Ayene. And submit suggestions for the oversight ward and later loot. There was something else. Oh, too. And submit. The speaker last week, she read the riot act of non-answering of questions. There's also the riot act after, but the next week, can we get your proposal, colleagues, by close of business tomorrow afternoon, so that we can endeavor to have this correspondence out next week. So it's Mr. Director, the court, the minister at this point, and then AG will of course brief us at some point as a standard operating procedure, but probably more detail on this matter. Then at that point, luckily Labour's here, so he already knows that I'm going to be sending them a letter. Mm-hmm. Even better, makes my job a whole lot easier. Alright, so advocate will be in touch and then we will finalize on that correspondence by Friday. So colleagues, please do submit, but in the main the thrust is the issues that we have raised. We will then take the TORs forward at a later stage on the basis of what comes out of the process we are about. So we're in the preparatory work in another phrasing. Is that in order? Yeah, right.
On the
sharp.
Which one, Jay?
6:30, 3:14 today. Public works and infrastructure.
Honourable Jay, this one.
And lunch is at 12:30. 12:30. So see you at 12:30. On that note, the meeting stands adjourned. A bongo.
I'm not sure.